Hello, my spooky friends.
My name is Cassie.
And I'm Caitlin.
And welcome in to I'd Survive. I feel like I sounded a little bored that run. Like, it was like, it could have been better, but it was good enough.
It worked well. Yeah.
I still smiled through it. So, first of all, well, actually, I'm going to get what I did this week out of the way so that I can really dive in on your week, because I'm really excited to talk about the movie that you watched.
Beautiful.
So, let me get mine out of the way. So, no new movies, or at least horror movies for me this week, but I played two games over on Twitch that are both in the horror realm. So, I played What Remains of Edith Finch, and heck, I played, yeah, Little Miss Fortune.
Heck yeah, times two.
I don't know how I went so long without playing those. I didn't, yes, realize how short they were, and just like, I never knock a game out in one go, like literally, right, never. I drag everything out. I make like a 2-hour game 5 freaking hours.
Oh, yeah, same.
But they were like the perfect length, and then I was in my feels with Edith Finch. Definitely recommend.
Oh, so good. The story on that one, and just like, because it's so bizarre, yeah, like in all over the place, it's just such a cool experience. Yeah.
And I walked away with it. Like, it has a lot of commentary on death and how you view death and how that shapes life. And
yeah,
I loved that. And then Little Miss Fortune was like more fun to me, probably because it, yes, plays with humor a lot more.
For sure. It's still dark, but it's like, it's a lot funnier.
Yeah. Yeah. The dialogue is
so good.
It's so good. And like, whoever is the voice actor for that character, for like Little Miss Fortune, mm-hmm, makes the game.
Yes.
But I will say, when I got to the end of it, well, first of all, if you know what I'm talking about, you know, but I didn't collect all the sparkles. So I was pretty confused when the game ended the way that it did.
You know what's funny? Because I watched you finish that game, and then I was like, how did I react? I went back and I looked at mine, and I, yeah, had the exact same look on my face as you. Okay. Like, what, okay, the fuck?
Good.
So, yeah, like, we were in the same boat.
It's interesting that well, you know what? I'm not going to get into it. I'm not. This is not spoilers for Little Miss Fortune. Just go play it if you haven't played it.
Yeah.
And let us know what you think of the ending. But I did just see that. So now I need to play Franbo.
I was going to ask if people are begging for Franbo, because Franbo, mm-hmm, and Little Miss Fortune are very much just like together. Like, people put both, okay, of them, yeah, in the exact same boat. And I think there is a reference to Franbo in Little Miss Fortune.
I think there is, because I watched, obviously, I'm Vanilla Mace's number one fan, so I watched her playthrough of Little Miss Fortune after I played it, and her chat was like, Franbo, I don't even remember what the, yeah, reference was, but I was like, okay, I missed that, obviously, because I haven't played that yet, but they just announced that they're doing another game that connects Little Miss Fortune and Franbo.
Oh.
Yes, somehow.
Heck yeah.
So now, okay, I need to do Franbo, and then I'll be sat when that new game comes out.
Absolutely. No, for sure. Yeah. That's cool.
Okay, girl, you watched Train to Busan.
I did. Oh, my God. No, it's crazy that it's taken me this long to watch this one. And I think the biggest reason why was because I was like, I really want to cover this one for the channel. But I thought it was, mm-hmm, a copyright nightmare is what I'd, mm, heard. But then, like, I looked and a lot of people have covered this movie. So I think, yeah, hopefully we'll be good. But the movie is probably one of the best movies I've ever seen. It is,
yes,
so emotionally complex and deals with themes that, like, I've actually been seeing a lot of. A theme very similar to Dangerous Animals, actually, which we covered, yeah, last week, in the sense of like humanity being the true evil versus like the monster is not actually the evil,
right,
entity of the film. But what a good movie. I also don't tend to love zombie, mm-hmm, stuff, but this is so much more than it's not about the zombies. Like, it's about, yeah, the human relationships. And I also love a film that takes place in a super compact environment. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm really into those kinds of movies. So for so much of this film, the majority of this film, to take place on a train.
Yeah, zombie stuff hasn't ever been my biggest subgenre either when it comes, mm-hmm, to horror, but this is like by far my favorite zombie movie, media, mm-hmm, anything, depiction. Like, it just, yeah, is a perfect movie, in my opinion. I don't know why. one of like the few things that sticks out, I mean, a lot of stuff sticks out to me, but I'm not going to talk about the emotional stuff because I will cry.
You see.
But one of like the things that stick out to me with the movie is that shot where the zombies come bursting and pouring and dogpiling like
yep.
out and how fast they are. Like I had never seen that before.
True. Going into sprint. This.
So I was like, holy shit. Like they're not just like stumbling around or even running. Like that is a track star. Like every single one yes. of them.
Yes. No, the way they pile out. I think, are you talking about the shot where they come out of the like
Is it the terminal? Window?
Yes.
Yeah.
That is a great shot. I think yeah. this movie just like succeeded visually to me, especially like because the zombies are really creepy because a lot of mm-hmm. it is a little just like kind of acrobatics, I think. And I think they – based on watching it, it feels like they just sped up the footage in some parts that made it look particularly mm-hmm. creepy. But just the people who portrayed the zombies just nailed it.
Killed it, yeah.
So good.
Okay, so I guess we should probably get to what movie I'm covering today.
That is not enthusiasm, is what I just heard come out of your mouth. I guess we should probably – if we have to.
Okay. I don't know. Why do so many of my episodes, I genuinely go into them being like, I don't know how you're going to feel about this, how everyone's going to feel about this, but we're going to do it.
Yeah. No, it's so fair though, because I feel like I do the same thing yeah. every week. I just doubt everything. I'm like, yeah. it's probably trash, but you know, we're here.
Okay. So Sleepaway Camp was not positively received upon its initial okay. release in 1983. Many people turned their nose up at it for trying to jump on the Friday the 13th success train just a few years prior because, you know, it's yeah, teens yeah. at a camp and Friday the 13th just did that. So what are you doing here? That's kind of, I think, how people viewed this. And it's like also a whodunit on top of that. So there's probably inspiration there. Like, you can't deny that.
Yeah. And I mean, those are all fun elements. So,
yeah.
How can yeah. you screw that up?
Let me get through. I'm going to get through the background. I don't even remember what I freaking wrote here, but I'm going to get through the background and then I'm going to try to explain to you how I feel personally okay. about the movie before we get Great. Into it. So, a lot of people rolled their eyes at it. However, over time, it has garnered a cult following, which I personally am realizing my two favorite types of horror films. A festival film, and a cult yep. classic.
Okay.
The writer and director of this film is Robert Hiltzik, and he would go on to be involved in 4 of the 5 films that make up this franchise. Didn't know this was a franchise, but okay. Boy. And these movies are literally his only credits on IMDb outside of his credit as executive producer for a movie called Toxic Tutu from 2017.
I'm sorry.
I don't know what's going on there. I might need to check it out.
Yeah.
But other than that, literally just Sleepaway Camp to his name on IMDb.
Oh.
I don't recognize any of the cast in this one, but I do want to note when it comes to the cast, this is a story of an adolescent summer camp, and the majority of our cast are genuine adolescents.
Oh.
Which, yes, very different, especially for the time. Like, usually you've got adult, like, really old adults.
Yes.
Playing, well, so sorry. By old, I mean, like, 30s, but that's not old. But I mean, when you're trying to be a 14-year-old, it's old.
We got you. We got you.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, yeah. Weird for its time because, yeah, they never do that. But the youthfulness of this cast really did stand out to me and make a lot of the movie that much more disturbing.
For sure.
And then lastly, before we get into it, I'm just – okay, this was my little disclaimer I wrote in here. Okay.
Oh, boy.
I'm just going to tell you right now that we're going to have a lot to talk about by the time we get to the end today because – there's a lot of modern criticism and debate when it comes to some harmful themes in the movie, whether intended to be harmful or not, that some argue are problematic while others argue the opposite.
Interesting. So, okay.
Now I said I was going to say what I thought.
Uh-oh.
I think I understand why it's a cult classic, and I find this movie interesting for the conversations that it provides people, but that's kind of where it ends for me.
Ooh, okay. I'm really intrigued. You know, this is reminding me of when we did like Slumber Party and I was like, there are things that people talk about and reasons for why, blah, 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 blah. So I'm intrigued to see what those themes end up being. Although, yeah. I mean, I got some guesses, I'll be honest, yeah. but, you know, I'm curious to see.
Oh, it's the freaking 80s, like.
Exactly.
So we open up with some establishing shots of Camp, oh, God damn it, I was going to re-look up how to say this. It's like Arawak or Arawak.
Okay.
Or I don't know.
I'm going to go with whatever you decide.
Pick your poison. I don't know which one's right, if either of them are. Okay. A beautiful, cozy lakeside camp in upstate New York. And there are a bunch of kids and teens playing on the camp's sandy shore, but we end up focusing on a dad and his two children out on the other side of the lake on their little sailboat, just relaxing and basking in the sun. John Baker is the dad, and then he has a daughter and son, Angela and Peter. Both probably around 5 to 6 years old, if I had to guess.
Mm, okay.
And the kids are distracted by a motorboat out on the lake with them, with a water skier trailing off the back. And little Peter goes, "That looks neat. Can I try it, Dad?" And John is like, "Maybe in a couple of years when you're older and if we ever get a motorboat." Little Angela clocks that the motorboat people are part of the camp from across the lake and says, "Hey, can we go to that camp one summer? Maybe they'll show us there, like how to water ski." Mm-hmm. And their dad laughs a little and shrugs, saying, "I don't know about that," which I don't know what that's about. I think he's just like, "I don't want to spend that money." Like, yeah. Maybe. Typical.
I don't know about that.
Yeah. Now we cut to the drivers on the motorboat and see that it's two teenagers who must be camp counselors, and the water skier is one of the camp kids named Dolores. And counselor Marianne is screaming back at Dolores about how great she's doing, but Dolores is in distress and is like, "Hey, can we be done now?" Like screaming back at them to please stop. And either Marianne doesn't hear her or doesn't care because she turns to Counselor Craig beside her, who's driving the boat and is like, "Hey, how about you let me have a turn now?" Like driving. And there's some back and forth here where Craig's like, "No, I'll get in trouble if I let you drive. Your dad will kill me." I'm assuming she doesn't have a boating license. Mm-hmm. But all it takes is for Marianne to like bat her lashes and go, "Please."
Oh my God.
And then Craig's like, "All right, fine." And while the boat is still going with this poor, miserable water skier on the back, they switch places and Marianne starts to drive. Meanwhile, back to John and the two kids. The kids have decided to pull a prank and push their dad in the water. And when they do so, all of them fall in and their little sailing boat capsizes. Yeah.
My dad would not be amused. No. Let me just say that right now.
I wouldn't, honestly, I wouldn't either. Like, I try to be a fun person, but I'm often not.
So. Yeah, mood. Hey.
So John is laughing and takes the joke all in good fun. So, like, dad's not mad. He's splashing around with Angela and Peter.
And
that is when John's boyfriend, Lenny, comes walking down to the shore and shouts at them that Aunt Martha is going to be over for dinner soon and they'd better come back and get ready.
Interesting.
For the 80s, very That's interesting.
Very interesting for the 80s.
Yes. And the kids are excited to see Aunt Martha, but a little sad when John tells them that their cousin Ricky won't be coming with her this time because he's spending time with his father. So he has like divorced parents.
Gotcha.
Back to Marianne driving the motorboat. She's kicked up the speed and is having the time of her life giggling, messing around with Craig. Yeah. You see what we're building up to.
What? Dude, this is so – I'm so – okay, stupid. First of all, you're putting the life of a child at risk here, which, come on.
Yep.
Come on now.
Like, you're supposed to be counselors. No, the idea of, like, teenage counselors for camps really stresses me out, actually.
It does. No, I think back to – I used to be a counselor at Vacation Bible School. I think I was in sixth grade as a counselor.
Oh, my God.
Like, what?
That's so wild.
What was I doing?
Even like in like babysitting culture, I don't know what it's like these days, but I know back in the day, like you would hire and pay like an 11-year-old to watch your kids.
Yeah. What the hell?
I would not.
Same.
So meanwhile, Dolores is screaming in the back on her skis, not only because she's scared with how fast they're going, but because she sees John and his kids and the capsized boat straight ahead. And Marianne is about to hit them. So Marianne and Craig hear her screaming and turn back and ask her what's wrong. It's actually comedic, like the way they turn back, like, "Hey, what's going on? You okay?" Like, yeah. like driving the car, but they're driving the boat, but like just completely 90 degree angle looking back for like a minute straight, like trying to see what's going on. After like trying to focus on Dolores, Craig and Marianne literally look at each other like, did you hear what she said? Did you hear what she said? It's crazy.
I'm gonna lose my mind. It's fine.
Yeah, they're like, huh, can't hear her. Now at this point, John, Dad John, is seeing this motorboat come straight for him and his kids. And he's trying to swim them all out of the way, but you can't really get anywhere when you're in the water. And it's too late. Marianne drives straight over the family and their little sailboat, like zooms on over it all. She noticed them at the last second, but didn't have time to turn and avoid them.
Yikes.
And we see John's boyfriend, Lenny, gasp and stare at the scene like in horror from the shore.
Mm-hmm.
And Dolores has fallen over off of her skis and is sobbing in the water. And Marianne and Craig have managed to stop the boat and are looking back to see what exactly they've done here, how much damage they've caused here.
Yeah, let's take a look.
Yeah. And we see John float up to the surface face down.
Oh my God. Ew, this is like disturbing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is a very, like, just hearing about it, it's like, oh, because this could happen. And that's yikes.
It's very real and sad and disturbing. Yeah. We see John float up to the surface face down. And then we see one of his little kids' life jackets float up next to him. And we find out that John and his son, Peter, are dead. But Angela was able to avoid the collision enough and is alive and traumatized.
Yeah, super fun. I almost would rather just go out in that moment.
Right.
To be honest. Like, just take
that's
me
hard
with
to
you.
Live with. No, that's so hard. I cannot imagine what goes on in your brain as like a 6-year-old on top of that, like trying to comprehend everything. We cut to several years later, I think about 8 years later.
Oh.
Yes, Angela has been taken in and raised by Aunt Martha with her cousin Ricky.
Okay, yes.
And we find out here that Aunt Martha is quite the character.
Oh, no.
So she's sending Ricky and Angela off to summer camp, and she's calling for them from the bottom of the stairs. She goes, okay, I'm going to talk like she talks, okay?
Oh, God.
She goes, Richard, Angela, we don't want to be late for the bus.
Oh my God, no. I'd slap her. Just don't.
It's
don't
so
do that.
So crazy. I the hate way it. She
Ew!
Talks.
I hate it.
I'm going to keep it up too. I'm going to try to keep it up. And then she takes a beat and she talks to herself going, goodness, no, that wouldn't do at all. You know, being late for the bus.
Oh, ew. No, she's a creep and a weirdo.
Yeah, it's so,
like,
especially compared to like the way that everyone, all the other actors are acting in the movie. Like, she sticks out in a weird theatrical way that, like, does not mesh with everyone else. It's like, who are you? Like, where did you come from?
I don't like her.
Yeah. So it's then that Richard or Ricky and Angela come walking down the stairs together in their, God damn it, I have to say it again, camp, arrow walk, outfits.
Heck yeah.
And Aunt Martha's delighted, saying, oh, there you are. Look what I did. I packed you and your cousin some goodies for the ride up to camp. Wasn't that nice of me?
Dude, I have bad feelings in my body right now. Like, I don't like the way that it makes my spine feel. What the fuck? Ew.
She talks like she's a kid's cartoon show. It's like, Jesus. We need to find the yellow backpack. Can you find the yellow backpack?
If she does not die in the next 5 minutes, I'm going to have a conniption.
It's wild. And like, the kids are just acting like this is normal, which I suppose it probably is to them. But
yeah.
Anyways, Ricky is pulling food out of this goodie bag that she put together, and we see him grab an apple out of it with like a disgruntled expression, and he's like, did you pack any chips?
And me!
I know. Like, where's the good stuff? And Martha's like, oh, yes, I believe I did. A whole bag. Mm. At least I think I did.
I want to know from the people, is this making you as uncomfortable as it's making me? Because I hate it.
I personally hope so.
I think it probably is working.
She then walks up to Angela and asks her if there's anything she needs at all, but Angela doesn't answer. Angela has not spoken at all in this scene, and she has a very solemn expression on her face the whole time. I guess she's very introverted, but there's also a sadness, like a perpetual sadness to her. And yeah, no talking. So Ricky's like, okay, we're going to be late. We'd better get going. And Aunt Martha leaves Angela B and is like, oh, you're right. We don't want you to miss the bus. No, that wouldn't do. Oh, but wait, I almost forgot something. I just knew I would forget it. So I tied a little string around my finger so I would remember.
Fucking weirdo.
Why? If I put a string around my finger, I'd be like, damn it, why did I put this string around my finger? Like, how is it going to remind me of something?
No, I've heard about this, like, being a thing that people really do. Yes. People will, like, because it'll remind you that there is something.
Right.
But for me, it would remind me that there's something that I'm not going to remember.
Exactly. That's how I would – it would work for me as well.
Yeah. I have heard of this being a tactic.
Okay.
Well, she would be the kind of person to use it. I can tell you that right now. This is really throwing me off because it's like, I can't tell if it's in, it's like she, because it feels like they're trying to set her up as creepy or, but is she actually, or did the actress just go ham? Is it a directional, intentional decision? Yeah. Like, you know, where are we?
This is where I was at, especially because of like the just the normalness of the kids and like Ricky being like, all right, love you, gotta go. Like just acting like this is normal. So I'm like, okay, he doesn't seem like to have a bad relationship with her. She's just a weirdo. Like what's going on here?
Right.
So anyways, she's like, yes, yes, I put this string on my finger. And then she just stands there like in an odd silence and until Ricky is like, okay, well, what is it, Mom? And she thinks for a beat before going, oh, just a moment. I'll be right back. And she rushes down the hall and Ricky looks at Angela and rolls his eyes going, good old mom's at it again. So I think they know she's like got her little antics and quirks, but they're just like, whatever. And then Martha comes rushing back to them with papers in her hands and says, here we are. Can't go to summer camp without our physicals now, can we? Just be careful not to tell anyone how you got them. And then more inwardly to herself, she goes, no, no, I'm afraid that they wouldn't approve of that at all, even though they know that I am a doctor.
What?
Which terrifies me, her being a doctor.
Yeah, no, 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 she is not my doctor.
And then, yes, also what, like, what, where did you get these physicals and like, why?
It's not weird to have physicals. Like, you just, what do you mean? Why is this, sus?
Like, you're their mom. Like, you can get their physicals for them. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that, woman. Like,
weirdo.
Ricky smiles sweetly and it goes, no matter what they do, I'll never tell. And Martha tells him what a dear he is and says her goodbyes to Ricky and Angela and asks Ricky to take care of her little girl who still has not spoken a word, by the way. And they're off to catch the summer camp bus. We cut to a shot of all the summer camp kids running off of their buses now that they've made it to camp. And I'm seeing kids literally from the ages of like 5 to 20, it feels like. I mean, I assume the 20-year-olds are like the counselors.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it goes as young as I would guess like 5 to 6 years old.
Oh, boy.
They're all running and excited and like tripping. And we've got the two camp co-owners standing there trying to yell orders and like command order with these kids. Yeah, yeah. And one of them is younger, right? One of them is younger and he's the head counselor, I think. Like he's in charge of the counselors.
Okay.
And he's got this little clipboard in hand. And then the other and his name is Ronnie.
Ronnie.
And then the other co-owner is Mel. And he's much older, like maybe 60s, I would guess 70s. Okay. And he's got a cigar in his mouth. Like he's just like, oh, damn kids. But yeah, none of these kids are listening. They're just running around together in like an excited chaos. And then we cut over to the kitchen staff standing outside watching all of the kids arrive. And the kitchen staff is made up of 5 men and the head cook named Artie. He says, look at all that young, fresh chicken. Where I come from, we call them baldies. Makes your mouth water, don't it?
No.
Yeah. Like, Artie, I think you're on your own here, and I think we need to call 911.
Yeah, I think you need to go, because there's a lot of ways I could take what you just said, and I don't like any of them.
Yeah, the worst one is definitely the way he means it.
Oh, good.
An older guy on the staff says to him with a little laugh, "Artie, they're too young to even understand what's on your mind."
Ew.
And Artie responds, "Ben, good buddy, there ain't any such thing as being too young. You're just too old."
Ew. Okay, like, great. This is
basically
great.
Right, saying like they're never too young for us. They just think we're too old for them.
That's a wild way to open a character.
I know, I know. And then Ben, like the guy that was bouncing off, Artie is the main creep here. But then Ben, another kitchen staff, is just laughs and like walks away with like an "oh you," like he literally like bats his hand like "oh you," and waves off Artie's like "oh so silly" comments. And I'm just more horrified than ever. I'm like, I cannot believe you just said that.
Yep.
And I cannot believe that the reaction from the rest of the kitchen staff is just hee hee ha ha.
Yeah, no. No, that's great. I love
so this. I'm guessing you want Martha dead and you want Artie dead.
I would love for both of them to die. I think Artie might have moved to number one, but it's real close.
Yeah. So we cut to Ricky and Angela walking toward the camp with their bags when another boy about Ricky's age comes up. Oh, I don't know if I said they're like probably 13. Years old okay. now, Ricky and Angela. And then a boy Ricky's age comes up and jumps on him from behind. And we learn that this is Ricky's friend, Paul. I think a friend that he made at summer camp over the last couple of years. But this year is Angela's first time coming to camp with Ricky. So he introduces Paul to her and Paul smiles at her and is like, "Hey, how you doing?" But Angela just looks down, like stays quiet, avoids eye contact. So Paul gives Ricky a look like, "Hey, what's up with her?"
Yeah.
And Ricky says, "She's kind of shy, I guess. First time away from home and all. I got to show her to her bunk, so I'll catch you later." So Paul's like, "Okay, chill." And he starts to run off, but then he turns back and is like, "Oh, hey, Rick, wait till you get a load of Judy. Man, oh, man." And then he gestures two solid handfuls at his chest. You know, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Ricky smiles and is like, "Oh, yeah?" And Paul continues on his way. So Ricky explains to Angela, he goes, "Me and Judy were steadies last summer. Hey, you'll probably be in the same cabin." First of all, I kind of love like steadies. Steadies is so funny. It's studies. So cute. On their walk over to the cabin, Ricky sees Judy herself standing with a group of guys. And it's wild because Ricky is definitely played by like a 13, 14 year old.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty sure Judy, this girl's got to be like 17, 18.
Mm.
So, and you can tell, especially when it's like boy versus girl at that age.
True.
Like she just looks so much older than him.
Oh, God.
It's like, okay. Ricky calls out to Judy and just side-eyes him before going back and talking to the much taller boys that she's hanging out with this year.
Bye.
Yeah. And one of them goes, "Oh, isn't that the kid that you were babysitting last year?"
Ew.
Yeah. And Ricky shrugs and is like, "Guess I'm not good enough for her anymore." He's like, "Whatever." And he goes and drops Angela off at her cabin. There are a bunch of girls in there already. And Judy walks in and ends up being one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And Meg and Susie introduce themselves as the girls' counselors. I think there's like two counselors per bunk, and they say if anyone needs anything, come to them. Meanwhile, the girls are all sitting on their beds and organizing their stuff. And I can't lie, Angela is staring at Judy, and it's kind of creepy. Like she has a very, very intense, unblinking, empty gaze, and her eyes are not leaving Judy. So Judy clocks this and is like, "What are you staring at?"
Yeah.
Which, like, I'd probably have the same – I might have the same – like, how intensely she's staring. I'm like, yeah, I'd probably ask the same. But, of course, Angela doesn't respond, just keeps staring. And, again, Judy goes, "What, are you taking pictures? Quit it." And that's when the counselors come over and see what's going on. And Susie is like, "Oh, you must be Angela." And then to Meg, she goes, "This is who Ronnie told us about." And Counselor Meg literally rolls her eyes at Angela and goes, "Looks like we got a real winner here." And Judy piles on going, "You ain't kidding." And then Susie is like, "I don't know. It seems like Ronnie talked to them and probably said like this is her first time away from home. Like just keep an extra eye on her. Make sure she's all good."
Right.
And Susie is more empathetic to that. She's like, "We should be nice to her and make sure she feels comfortable."
Yeah.
A couple days later in the camp cafeteria for lunch, Meg has to go get Ronnie's help to handle Angela because she's refusing to eat her food. Like she's just sitting there and staring down like she always does.
Mm-hmm.
And Ronnie gets down on his knee next to her and is like, "Angela, Meg told me that you haven't eaten much since you've been here. Is that true?" And Angela doesn't answer him because, like, of course.
Yeah.
And Meg's like, LOL, yeah, you're not going to get a word out of her. She hasn't talked in 3 days now.
Oh, boy.
So Ronnie's like, all right, why don't I take you into the kitchen and we can find something you like? Angela doesn't nod, nothing, just stares. But yes, he takes her into the kitchen and he takes her straight to the head chef, Artie.
No.
Explaining to him, hey, she isn't very talkative and she's not really a fan of your cooking either. So do you think you could take her in the back and get her some ice cream or something, whatever she wants?
No, we already cannot take any children in the back at all.
Never in the back. Never, ever.
No.
Artie, of course, is delighted to show Angela to the back.
Stop. Don't say delighted.
Oh, delighted. Ronnie leaves her with him and heads back to the cafeteria. And Artie puts his arm around Angela's shoulders and goes, I'll bet we can find something interesting in the walk-in. You never know what you can find in there. Back out in the cafeteria, Ricky walks by Angela's table and sees that she's missing. So he asks Meg where she is, and she fills him in before asking, hey, what's wrong with your cousin anyway? She doesn't eat, she doesn't talk, she doesn't do anything. And Ricky gets annoyed and stands up for her, going, why don't you just leave her alone? She's just quiet. Back to Angela now in the walk-in pantry alone with Artie.
No.
He closes the door. And then he goes, so Angela, see anything you like? Maybe I can help you decide. You sure are a sweet-looking little cupcake, ain't you?
Sweet-looking little cupcake. Ew.
Yeah. Yeah, I hate that. Angela isn't saying anything. She has her usual stare aimed at him, but she backs away until her back meets the wall. And Artie starts to undo his belt goes, I think I've got something you're going to like real good. Thankfully. That's when Ricky comes in looking for her. And when he walks in, he sees Artie fumbling to redo his belt.
Uh-huh.
And he freaks out, screaming at him like, hey, what are you doing? Artie grabs Ricky and pins him against the shelves, screaming in his face that he needs to keep his mouth shut about this and, like, threatening him to the point that Ricky does get scared and agrees that, yes, okay, he'll keep his mouth shut.
Then
he grabs, like, Ricky. Ricky grabs Angela, and they both run out of the kitchen past the camp owner, Mel, who happens to be in there at the moment. And then Artie comes out, and Mel's like, what was that?
Uh-huh.
And Artie shrugs, like, oh, I must have scared him. Which, like, yes, but yeah, do you care to elaborate? And Mel looks at him, like, kind of suspiciously, but doesn't say anything.
Ugh.
Later that day, Artie is alone in the kitchen, boiling some corn in this gigantic boiler that is probably, like, 3 to 4 feet tall on the counter. So every time he checks on it, he's got to stand on a chair to reach the lid.
Jeez.
He is whistling away doing his work, and suddenly we're in the POV of someone who is sneaking around the kitchen watching him without him realizing.
Oh, darn. This mm-hmm. is so upsetting.
We're so sad. And while he's up on that chair pouring salt into the boiler, the POV creeps up behind him, and then a hand reaches out and, like, pushes his butt so that he falls over the boiler. The open boiler, and he panics and, like, grabs for the shelf above it. Like, there's a wall right there, and he, like, grabs the shelf. And I guess he just doesn't have the arm strength to, like, push himself back because he's just whining and crying, like, hey, help me, help me. Who's messing with me?
Oh, my God, I love it.
Yeah. You know, there's something – this is very 80s. Like, the most ridiculous sequences happen, and I'm just like, literally just stand up. Literally just push yourself.
No, I know.
But they're just like, I'm stuck. Like, everyone's always stuck.
Oh, my – for sure.
Instead of helping him, this person kicks out the leg of his chair.
Hell yeah.
Causing him to topple over with the boiler, and that boiling water pours all over him. He's immediately covered head to toe in boils and what I assume to be third-degree burns. And his fellow cook staff guy, Ben, comes running in at the sounds of his screams and just stands there and stares at him in shock.
Yeah.
And then we cut to the ambulance carrying out his completely wrapped up screaming body in a stretcher. So he unfortunately is still alive, but in really bad, like, pretty much, is it irreparable? Not irreparable. It's like irreparable state.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I think that's better.
Yeah, he has to live like that, yeah.
Yeah. This is interesting that they set up this horrible, horrible character,
mm-hmm.
have a lot of motives for different people.
Yep.
And I want to think that nobody is upset about this. Like, you're rooting for the killer in this moment.
Yes.
Which is
absolutely
a little different, I feel like, than what you usually see in these kinds of films.
Yeah. Okay. And Mel's talking with the ambulance people now, trying to get them to wrap it up and get out of here as soon as possible because he doesn't want any of the camp staff or kids to know about this and scare any families from sending their kids back.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he just gives the kitchen staff a raise to keep quiet and like calls it a day. He's like, all right, let's keep moving. Like he really doesn't give a fuck. And I'm like, okay, valid. Like, I don't really give a fuck either. So
yeah, me neither.
Keep it moving.
We're good.
So then we cut to Ricky's bunk where he is pulling a prank on one of his bunk buddies that involves this poor boy accidentally smacking his face into another boy's bare ass. And I did not laugh. I'm like so happy. I'm so happy I'm not a boy because the shit that teen boys pull on each other is diabolical. Like I would not survive.
Oh, so true.
But anyways, his camp counselor, Gene, is like, all right, boys, time to go kick some ass. And we cut to a baseball field where their bunk is competing with like another bunk team. And we genuinely just get a good 3 to 4 minutes of the movie here where it's just a bunch of boys playing ball and like trash talking each other and being in the 80s wearing their little Daisy Dukes and crop tops. And in the end, it is Ricky's team that wins, but their opposing team is like, we'll get them back. We'll get them back. So it's like they're like setting up a boys bunk rivalry here.
Yeah.
That night, a bunch of the campgoers are hanging out in the rec room together with some music. It's like this big unfinished barn vibe. It's cute.
Love that.
And we're focused on the bunk rival boys. And Billy, the head rival counselor, goes to these boys who honestly, like, who freaking knows if they're also counselors or if they're camp kids. Like, I can't tell. I don't know who is who. Like, whatever. The ages are all over the place. But we're met with, like, a trio here, which is Billy, Mike, and Kenny. And Billy's like, we still need more babes. Who wants to go skinny dipping with 15 guys and only 5 girls? They're trying to round up as many girls as they can for
oh my God.
Skinny dipping tonight. Mike suggests that they ask Angela, and we cut to her sitting down on some bleachers, eating a snack, minding her own business in this barn. But Kenny is like, man, I've been watching her all week, and she is fucked up. So, of course, leader boy Billy is like, wait a second. Are you guys scared to ask Angela? And the guys are like, scared? Like, hell no.
Yeah.
Never, not me.
Couldn't be me.
Yeah. So the both of them give in, and Kenny's like, all right, we'll do it. Who knows? Maybe we'll get married one day. And Mike and Kenny walk on over to Angela, and Kenny leads the pitch. And he's like, hey, Angela, we're all going down to the lake tonight, you know, for a little swim. And we were kind of wondering, you know, if, if you wanted to join us or something.
Nailed it.
And you'll never believe what Angela does. She just stares at these two boys like she stares at everything. So Mike's like, all right, let me handle this, Kenny. You're screwing it up. And then he leans down closer to Angela and goes, listen, Angela. What say me and you go for a little walk somewhere? Talk about tonight, huh? She stares. Mm-hmm. And that's when these boys start getting mad and they throw a temper tantrum.
Oh, of course they do.
They start name calling, telling her that she's a Looney Tunes nutcake. Then they start mocking her, like walking stiffly in place with big stares, pretending to be her.
What the frick?
Yeah. Their egos are hurt real bad.
Yeah, clearly.
And then Kenny goes, yo, Angela, why are you so fucked up? But thankfully, her cousin Ricky shows up wearing a cowboy hat for some reason. I don't know. And he sees what's going down and goes and shoves Kenny on the shoulder going, hey, dickface, leave her alone. And
okay,
Kenny
Ricky
retaliates. Yeah. You know what? W Ricky for constantly standing up for her.
Yeah. Exactly.
In every situation. Kenny, of course, though, retaliates by knocking the cowboy hat off his head and going, oh, yeah? What are you going to do about it, asshole? And, you know, it's that time of the 80s movie where we get a little scuffle, except it's between Ricky, who looks 13, and Kenny, who looks 18. And there's also not much punching going on, more of just like a melding of bodies and pushing. And then all of a sudden, every boy in this barn just dog piles on top of each other and start like moving as one.
Oh.
And it's odd. It's interesting. But Angela's blank stare at this spectacle, literally me watching this, I'm like,
yeah.
Okay. Eventually, Ricky's counselor, Gene, ends up tearing him away from the fight and holding him back. And the whole rival group of boys just puts up their middle fingers and leaves the barn. And his friend Paul comes up. Paul was in on it too. And is like, hey, don't worry about it, Ricky. We'll get him back. And Ricky and Jean start to head out. But Paul looks back to see – remember, Paul is Ricky's, like, bestie.
Okay.
Paul looks back to see Angela still sitting on those bleachers. And he walks over and takes a seat next to her and goes, listen, I heard – well, I mean, Ricky told me all about it. And I'm really sorry what happened to your family. Mm-hmm. Me and Ricky have been best friends for 3 years already. We always seem to get into trouble together. Like last year, we hung the girls' panties on the flagpole. And then he stops and like looks at Angela's stare and then gets embarrassed because like, why did he just say that?
Yeah.
And then he's like,
bro, okay.
He's just like, sorry. We got caught anyway.
Yeah.
And then at this point, mean girl Judy is looking over at Paul talking to Angela with a look of disapproval. Like she just hates to see people talking unless it's to her.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Paul's continuing to tell Angela about the different antics that he and Ricky have gotten up to. And Angela's stare actually has turned into something of substance. Like she looks pretty enamored. Like she's enjoying him talking to her. But that's when Jean comes back looking for Paul and is like, hey, bunk 19, it's time to go. So Paul looks a little sad but shrugs and is like, guess I gotta go. Good night, Angela. And he gets up and starts walking away when Angela speaks up and says, good night.
Oh. Oh.
With like a little smile on her face. And Paul whips around with like a huge smile. And he probably goes, good night, before running off with like a new pep in his step.
God, I can see this. I can totally see this. It's so corny in the best way.
Like corny classic 80s perfection. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And Angela's just still sitting there on the bleachers with like a little smile. And also I wanted to say this is so reminiscent of season one of Stranger Things to me, where Eleven doesn't really talk. One of the first times she does is to Mike when Mike says goodnight and she's like, night, Mike. And he's like, and then he walks away.
Interesting.
I was like, I wonder if they – I mean, this is the 80s, an 80s film. So I'm like, I wonder if they took any inspiration at all from this.
Right.
It's like, that's a random piece, but it really, really is like spot on.
Yeah, exactly. Like it's a crazy coincidence otherwise.
Yeah. So now we cut down to the lake and it's pitch black outside. All the rival boys are trying to convince like this new group of random girls to go skinny dipping with them. And basically how this goes is like the girls are like, no. And then the boys are like, you guys are lame anyways. Let's go, boys. And then the boys just decide to get naked. I've never seen so much bare ass at once in my life. And then they all jump in the lake together.
Crazy.
It's like, good for you. Have fun, I guess.
Have a good time.
Yeah. Two boys in the group are not participating, though. It's Mike and Kenny, the two boys who like tried to get Angela to come down.
Yep.
And they're too busy getting high by the forest edge. But eventually they walk over to the girls and they're giggling thanks to whatever they just smoked. And then the girls are just as unamused with them as they are with the skinny dippers. And
true that.
Kenny asks one of the girls, Betsy, if she wants to go on a moonlight canoe ride with him. And she's like, yeah, I'll pass. But then also she's like, but Leslie's coming down. Maybe she'll go, which I don't know why she thinks Leslie would want to, but apparently Leslie does. And Kenny and Mike, for some reason, find this to be hilarious. They share like a devious look with each other before we cut to Leslie and Kenny in a canoe.
Oh, okay.
And they paddle out a decent amount before sitting back and relaxing. And then like Leslie's running her hand through the water when Kenny goes, you better not leave your hand in there too long. All the water snakes and snapping turtles come out at night. And none of us are surprised when this little scene turns into a stupid prank where Kenny overturns the canoe, sending both him and Leslie into the water. And she's upset. She just swims away. She's like, you're an asshole. She swims away back to shore. And he calls after her, warning her to keep an eye out for water snakes.
What the hell?
Like, why do you do it? Like, why are you like all to all the boys in this movie? Like, yeah, what are you doing? Except Ricky.
I thought this was going to like he wanted to make out with her or whatever. Not he wanted to just dump her in the water. Like, haha, funny.
Yeah. like cool prank, bro. Like that's never so been done good. Before. When she leaves him, he swims underneath this capsized canoe and like pops his head up in the pocket of air inside of it. Mm-hmm. Leslie's long gone. She swam back to shore. She's leaving with the girls, but the joke still isn't over for Kenny. He's like putting on a ghosty voice. He's like, Leslie, hey you. And then he goes, hey, Baba Ray Bob. Hey, Baba Ray Bob.
What does that mean?
I don't know. I don't know what's happening here. Oh,
my God.
But yeah, back at the shore, like all the boys are laughing at the soaked Leslie walking away. And Mike calls out, hey, Leslie, see any water snakes out there? And then the rival boy group, it's the rival group that is just the most annoying group of boys that they've set up in this movie. The rival boy group starts laughing, like, this is just the funniest joke. Like, haha, water snakes are so, so funny. And then they all decide that they're going to head back to their cabin as well. Back underneath the canoe with Kenny, another head pops up in front of him. And we can't see the face. But he recognizes this person and goes, hey, what the hell are you doing here? I bet the rest of the boys will be interested in seeing you. And then this person, you can't tell if it's a boy or girl, then grabs Kenny and pushes him beneath the surface of the water back with the group of boys. They're all officially leaving the dock, but Mike sticks back for a second because he can see the canoe and he calls out for Kenny because they're like the besties.
Yeah.
Like, come along now. We're leaving. Hello. And he looks confused when there's no answer. But the other boys are just like, come on, Mike. Kenny's just being a wise ass again. We'll catch him back at the bunk. Ooh. So Mike shrugs and follows after the rest of the boys.
Well.
Yeah. Next morning, co-owner Ronnie, the younger one, is angrily cleaning up after the rival boys' mess that they left down at the dock the previous night. Yeah, there's like a bunch of furniture floating around in the lake and he's throwing it back to shore. And he's screaming about how Mel, the older co-owner, would never be caught doing this shit. And he's like upset about that too. Uh-huh. And then he comes across the washed up canoe. And when he flips it over, he finds Kenny dead, covered in sand and seaweed. Oh. And as a cherry on top, a water snake comes slithering out of his mouth.
Take that.
So he didn't watch out for him. He really didn't. When the ambulance arrives, there's no hiding this one from the kids. They're all gathered around watching the body bag get hauled away. And Mel is like, so this was an accident, right? He must have bumped his head on the canoe and drowned. We're writing this off as an accident. And Ronnie's like, I don't know about that, Mel, and tells the officer that he knew Kenny to be a good swimmer. And the officer says they didn't find any bumps or bruises, like insinuating that he bumped his head and got knocked out in the water or anything.
Right.
But Mel's crashing out and just demands that they write it down as an accident before storming off to go call Kenny's parents.
Okay.
First survivability check-in.
I'm not dead.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I'm dead. I'm going to say 100, I think, at this point.
Wow. Okay.
No, there's no – I mean, I'm not either of these characters in my mind. Technically, there's a killer.
Yeah.
So technically I could die, but I just don't think I'm a target in these scenarios. Well, I mean, I guess if I have to put myself in the shoes of the kid that's an idiot, there's a good chance I'm going to die. So hold on. Let me take that 100 back. Let me beep, beep, back it up. Because if someone's holding my head underwater, that's actually one of my fears is drowning. So
drowning.
The thought of that, it gives me bad feelings in my bones. I'm still going to put myself at like, an 87.
I gave myself a 90.
Okay.
Because it seems like, obviously, I am not Artie.
Exactly.
And that very much feels like a targeted, I know what you did.
Yes.
Situation.
Yes.
With Kenny as well, you could string it back to him bullying Angela. So I'm like, okay, if that's the motive there, I guess I wouldn't be dead in that situation either. But the fact is, like, I don't know the motive at this point. I don't know what's going on. Like,
right.
So that's why I gave myself like a 10% leeway, because I'm like, I think I wouldn't be either of these people. But also, what if, I don't know, I'm just randomly attacked? There's clearly someone out to get
people. Exactly. You're right. Yeah. I also find it interesting too, like you just said, like you could track it back to him bullying Angela, but most people are. So, right. it's really narrowing. It does seem like somebody's protecting Angela, but obviously, like, her cousin is the obvious, like, way too obvious to me at this point, which sometimes it is the obvious one. Shout out Scream.
You never know with and with the 80s movie, like, you never know what they're going to do.
Right.
Like,
are you going to twist this or is it going to be the most obvious thing that you are writing off because it's too obvious? So I'm curious to see which direction they go.
Okay. So a camp kid is dead. Everyone knows, but it's time to play some volleyball.
Oh,
so
cool.
The girls are all playing against each other and Angela is sitting on the side. She never participates in anything. And Paul comes over to sit next to her. She's all smiles. She's talking, saying hi and stuff. It's incredible. And Paul asks her if she wants to go to the movie with him in the rec room tonight. And she's like, don't we all have to go to that anyway? And he's like, yeah, but like, I mean, do you want to go together?
Mm-hmm.
And she gets this shy smile and says yes. And he's so excited and they're so cute.
Aww.
And of course, Judy is seething on the volleyball court seeing this and is like, hey, how come Angela gets to just sit around and talk to boys while we play volleyball? And Counselor Meg is like, you know what? You're right. And she walks on over to Angela to scold her about acting like a prima donna. But then the other nice counselor, Susie, gets in on this and is like, big deal. She was just talking to a boy. Let's just finish the game. Like, what are we so upset about?
Yeah.
So Meg is like, whatever, and goes back to the game while Susie sits down next to Angela with a hand on her shoulder and asks, are you sure you don't want to play? And Angela actually responds to Susie and says, I'm good. And Susie's like, do you want to do something else? Like, we can go canoeing. Like, oh, she probably didn't suggest canoeing at this time based on what just happened, but she's like throwing other stuff out there.
Yeah.
And Angela's like, no, I don't mind watching. Like, it's okay.
Oh my God. That was me as a kid. Like, that's, I didn't participate in anything as a kid. And
oh, really?
I sat and
wait,
watched.
Why?
I think I just was like, existing was embarrassing for me.
Yeah.
So I just never wanted to be perceived. And like the thought of, I think I always had this weird thing with like, if I put in effort, and people see that I put an effort and then I fail, I was so embarrassed by that. And so I never wanted to participate in games because I just felt like everybody was going to make fun of me for existing. So I just sat the side. 24/7.
I'm honestly a little bit that way still. Like, I'm sure people know what I'm doing when I do it, but I'm always setting up low expectations for myself and for others. And like, I'm probably going to suck at this, but then I like fucking destroy them.
Right. No, girl, you and I are the same because we both have that in us, but we're all also competitive as all hell.
Yeah.
So having both of those traits sucks.
Yes.
Because you don't want to embarrass yourself by trying, but you also want to win so damn bad.
Interesting thing here with Angela and Susie is just like the fact that Angela is talking to Susie. Mm-hmm. So it seems like when people are nice to her, she interacts and talks to them. After the movie that night, Paul asks Angela if he can walk her back to her bunk, which she agrees to. Ricky tries to catch up to Judy on the way out to ask if he can walk her home. Like, literally, why would he want to? I don't know. But he's like, stop being so stuck up. Can I walk you home? And she says no and walks off and is still obsessed with keeping an eye on Paul and Angela. He gets Angela back to the cabin, and before going in, he gives her a little peck on the lips, and it's quite sudden, and immediately he's like, I hope you're not mad that I did that. Immediately. And Angela's like, I'm not mad. I'd better go inside. So she's like, I think she's into it, but also feeling awkward.
Oh my
she's
God.
She's like, which I'm sure you can't relate to whatsoever.
No, that's not relatable. What the hell are you talking about?
And Paul's like, can I kiss you again? And he just goes in and gives her another peck. And Angela's just like, okay, I'm going to go inside now.
So, this is so funny.
She leaves. And as Paul is walking away from her cabin, of course, Judy is right there and is like, ooh, you and Angela are quite the item. I didn't know she was your type, if you know what I mean. And I think we're all sitting here like, no, Judy, like, literally, what do you mean?
I was going to say, I don't know what she means.
Paul's annoyed too, and he tells her to shut up and leave them alone, basically, before walking off.
Okay.
The next day, all the counselors have these kids playing down by the lake, and Angela isn't participating. She's sitting up on the bleachers at the top of the sand. Paul comes and says hi, and they goof around a bit, flirty, giggly, joking. It's cute, but of course Judy's there to ruin their vibe again. And just like makes stupid, annoying comments and is like, well, well, if it isn't the two lovebirds, like, okay, yes. And what about it?
And what about it?
Leave us alone. It's the same cycle of Paul telling her to leave them alone. And she does, but she walks right over to the mean counselor, Meg, and Meg comes marching on over. Paul sees this and is like, uh-oh, I'm going to go back in the water. So... Unfortunately, Angela is fending for herself here. Like, thanks, Paul.
Yeah, thanks for that.
Yeah. And Meg walks up to her, gets in her face, and is like, what? Still not going in the water? What's the matter? Don't you like to swim? Can you swim? Angela's obviously getting bad vibes, so she just does her whole blank stare thing.
Yep.
And Meg gets pissed, and she starts yelling, Angela, I'm talking to you. Are you going in the water? I'm waiting for an answer, yes or no. And oh my Angela... God. Doesn't answer, and it sends Meg like into a rage. She grabs Angela and starts shaking her violently.
Jesus.
Yeah, screaming at her to answer the question. And co-owner Ronnie comes running over and has to tear Meg off her and obviously is like, what the hell is going on here? Are you okay, Angela? Like, Meg, I want to see you in my shack right after swim period. Now get back to your post. Yeah. And Meg walks away defeated. W. Ronnie.
You know, can I, like, really quick, it's interesting. Yeah. I saw a reel recently that I'm noticing as a theme in this movie so far.
Mm-hmm.
It was supposed to be, like, it was, like, an animated thing, and it was, like, meant to be, like, a very serious message about, like, if you don't react to the way people are treating you, like, if you learn that, then you'll realize it's, like, very much a them problem because they will get angry if you don't react to it. Like, because that's all they're looking for.
It absolutely feels like... Yeah, Meg is just like having a conversation with, like making herself mad. Like Angela is literally not doing anything, but Meg is here getting worked up because it's not going how she wants.
Right. And it's, just not reacting is the right thing. Unfortunately, I don't tend to have that self-control. Me too. On YouTube in particular.
Yeah. It's hard. I usually am like, I get comments about people being like, don't even respond to those people. Don't even talk about what they said. And I'm just like, okay. Maybe I'll try that next time and then I don't.
No, same. Because it's like validating when you do talk about it and people are like, yeah, that's crazy. And I'm like, thank you. Thank you for making me feel better. It's crazy. Yeah.
In the girls' cabin later, we're not at all surprised to see the bullying continue for Angela.
Yeah.
Judy's leading the bully train this time. Shocker, shocker. After throwing a pillow at her, then getting mad at Angela for holding it and snatching it back. Judy's like, hey, Angela, how come you never take showers with the rest of us, huh? And then she goes, I'm going to say the word because we don't use it the same way these days. We've like reclaimed this word and it's a good thing. So, but she doesn't mean it in a nice way. She goes, you queer or something? Or maybe you haven't reached puberty yet. I bet you don't even have your period. That's a thing. I've seen this as a thing, especially like in older movies where people get made fun of for not maturing as fast as others in like middle school, even high school era. It's like, you don't have boobs yet. You didn't get your period yet. Like, that's so embarrassing. Like, hello.
That is impossible for me to wrap my head around as a concept. But like,
I'd be jealous. Like, you didn't get your period yet? Like,
I know. Congratulations. <That's awesome. laughs> Like, what the hell? I mean, it definitely does seem like an 80s kind of thing. Like, I feel like that doesn't happen anymore, but I've been wrong before about these things.
Right. I'm sure people on Discord will be like, actually, I got made fun of for that. And I'll be like, what the hell? Like, why is the world like this?
That is crazy.
So this is when the nice counselor, Susie, jumps in and is like, hey, stop it. Angela's allowed to shower anytime she wants to. And Judy goes, yeah, she takes showers where no one can see that she has no hair down below. She's a real carpenter's dream, flat as a board and needs a screw.
What?
I don't.
What? Help!
I don't know. Exactly. Like, just help us. Like, please. I'm so happy I didn't live in the 80s.
Honestly. Real. Oh my God.
Susie screams that that's enough. Judy tells her to fuck off. So Susie slaps her in the face. And like low-key, we all cheer because she's a fictional character and she's pissing us off. Okay.
Yeah.
But Susie immediately regrets her slip and like puts her hand over her mouth in shock at what she's just done. Cause like, she's the counselor. This is like a camp, one of her camp kids.
Yeah. This is a problem.
Yeah. And Judy runs off and then Angela is just there and is like, hey, I'm going to go down and see my cousin. And she leaves to walk over to Ricky's cabin. It's like, okay.
I'm just going to peace out real quick. It's all good.
The rival boys are right next door to Ricky's cabin. Like their cabin is right next to theirs. And they're all having a water balloon fight on their roof.
Oh,
so of
safe.
Course, yeah, as you do. So of course, as Angela walks up to Ricky's cabin, she gets pelted with a water balloon by Billy, like the main head counselor of that bunk.
Mm-hmm.
Ricky sees this and comes running out. She was like genuinely taken out by this water balloon. It's like really dramatic. She's like sitting on the grass and like very hurt.
I was about to be like, damn, he's being dramatic about it. But
yeah.
I guess she was like fully assaulted by a balloon. So
yeah.
Good to know.
So Ricky starts spewing some like insane profanity and threats at the rival boys. And Paul comes out at this point and goes and helps Angela. Co-owner Mel, old guy Mel, comes over because he heard Ricky screaming. And he puts an end to like all the nonsense, telling them to pull themselves together, be nice, or there will be consequences, blah, blah, blah. I mean, the rival boys are just like trying not to laugh through it all. And yeah. They don't really care about what he has to say. Like nothing's going to change. Not too long after all this, we cut to Billy in his bunk with Mike. So Billy's like the head counselor of the rivals. Mike is the friend of dead Kenny. And then there's another counselor there like with Mike and they're about to go down and play some baseball with some other counselors. And Billy's like, okay, perfect. I got to take a wicked dump first, but I'll meet you guys down there.
Okay. That's great for you.
Thank you for telling us. And we follow along with Billy as he goes and occupies one of the stalls in their cabin. And we watch as a wooden stick gets pushed between the handles of the stall, locking him inside.
Mm-hmm.
And then we see a window above his toilet. And mm-hmm. it's just like a screen window.
Yeah.
And a hand comes up with a knife and stabs the screen, like tearing it open.
Ooh.
Billy hears this and is like, who is that? Stop messing with me. Thinking it's one of the guys, he's like, God, I can't even shit in peace around here. And then a stick is guided through that hole in the window pane with a bee's nest buzzing on the end of it.
What? That's crazy.
And they start shaking the stick, like making the bees angry. And then the nest drops down into the stall.
Amazing.
Billy's screaming and trying to get out of the stall, finds himself locked in. He does eventually break that wooden stick that was keeping him locked in, but it's too late. When he falls out of the stall, he's dead.
Oh.
And the practical effects are wild. He's got like these insane blistering boils all over his body and face and is just completely swarmed. Like you can't even see his face because he's swarmed with bees. And I'm just like, that's cool. Like you're suspending disbelief here.
Yeah.
But it's fun. It looks interesting.
Okay. Love that.
We cut to Mel having another breakdown, this time having a bit more of a hush-hush private conversation with co-owner Ronnie. He's just fed up because now another kid is dead. They found Billy.
He's fed up.
He's fed up about it. He's like, no one's going to bring their kids back to my camp.
Oh, whatever shall we do?
Yeah. His business is crumbling, but he's got a good amount of determination now because he's like, I know who the killer is. I've seen the hate in his eyes and I'm going to do something about it.
Oh, dear.
And Ronnie's just standing to the side like, whoa, okay, we don't even know for sure there's a killer, but yes, mm-hmm. you do you. Which, like, I'd be pretty sure at this point. Like, it's too coincidental, if not.
I see. Yeah, I think I would think so. But I would also be like, how the hell did the killer kill you with bees?
Well, yes.
Like,
well, yes,
that would confuse me.
Then we cut to Angela and she's standing around the back of a cabin looking around, seeming a bit on edge. Maybe she should be, because then we get a POV of someone watching her from the woods.
Oh.
And then slowly walking up behind her before reaching a hand out, grabbing her shoulder. She gets jump scared.
Mm.
And we see that it's just Paul.
Yes, 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 of course.
Yeah. But Angela's like, oh my God, I thought you were the killer. And Paul laughs and is like, oh, come on, you don't believe any of that baloney, do you? What happened to Billy just sounds like a prank that got out of hand. And then he's like, all right, let's go before we get caught. And they run off together to the lake. And I just have to say, like, I would be the person that stays in bed all day, like, in groups. Like, this is enough for me. Like, I'm just so paranoid. I'm not running off to a lake with somebody at night.
No, I agree after with that.
The weird stuff that's been going on. Down at the lake, things are cute. They're chasing each other around. They end up lying in the sand and kissing. And Paul reaches a hand up and starts undoing the buttons on her blouse. Mm. Angela stops and says, no, don't. But Paul is like, come on, Angela, I'm not doing anything. And then starts kissing her neck and immediately starts to try and undo her buttons again.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And we see Angela completely dissociate and we get like a glimpse inside her mind. And we see her, it's like a flash, it's like a memory.
Okay.
Her and her brother Peter giggling while peeking in on her, their father in bed with his boyfriend Lenny.
Oh.
And John and Lenny, they're not even kissing. They're both just like shirtless, covered in like blankets and like caressing each other. I don't know. It looks like normal, like love. And then, but then the kids are like, hee-hee-hee-hee-hee.
Yeah.
So yeah. And then we get a shot of Angela sitting on the bed on like a different bed with her brother. And like the bed is literally spinning around and around in a pit of darkness with like a single spotlight.
Okay.
It's very – this memory is like very artsy, like directing wise.
Yeah.
And Peter is pointing at Angela and his hand is getting closer and closer to her shirt before we snap back into reality and Angela panics, screaming no at Paul, pushing him off of her and running away.
I don't like any of that.
Yeah. This is something we'll revisit because I don't know exactly what we're supposed to take here, but it'll be a post discussion.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. Sounds good.
The next day, a bunch of the campgoers are playing capture the flag, but Paul and Angela are standing off to the side and Paul is saying like, I don't understand what got you so upset last night. I didn't do anything that bad, did I?
That bad?
Right. And Angela goes, I'm sorry, Paul. I just wasn't ready. And Paul smiles and puts a hand around her shoulder and goes, hey, I understand. And she nudges him off of her and is like, please don't. Like, she just doesn't want to be touched.
Mm-hmm.
And Paul gets angry and is like, hey, what's the matter with you? And Angela says she has to go and just like walks away. And Paul's calling after her when Judy comes walking up to him and goes, I don't know why you even bother with her. She's so small. Paul rolls his eyes and is like, what do you know? And Judy gives him a very suggestive look and goes, I know lots of things. So the small comment.
The small comment.
I think before when she said like she doesn't seem like she would be her your type. And I think because in the beginning they were like making a big deal about how over the past year, Judy got herself a set of boobs.
Yeah.
I think she's just saying, like, she doesn't have boobs like I do. I thought you were into boobs. Like, I think that's what that is. Yeah.
Interesting.
We cut to Angela walking along the forest somewhere when Ricky comes running up next to her, begging her to help him out with a capture the flag strat that he's putting together. Like, he's really just trying to live his summer camp experience.
You know what? Love that.
Yeah. It takes some convincing because she's not in the best mood right now, but eventually she's like, okay, fine, I'll help you. And they head into the forest to do his little game plan. But while they're walking through the forest, they stumble upon Judy and Paul making out.
Ooh, bear.
Yeah. Well. And Angela runs off, obviously upset.
Yep.
And there's 20 minutes left of the movie. This is our second survivability check-in. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So,
which just Billy, right?
Yeah, the bees thing. I mean, how am I gonna judge this? Like, literally, we wouldn't die from that. Because I think we would. Couldn't he have like crawled under the stall or no?
Literally, yes. It had like that gap, but it goes back to like even the first thing with the creep Artie, how he could have just pushed himself off the shelf and like. Yeah, the deaths in this, a lot of them are like, that's not believable, but okay.
Yeah, right. I think I'm going to survive that for the most part. Mm-hmm. Oh, No, but I have to account for other opportunities. I'll go 85.
Okay.
Part of me wanted to go higher, but I also have to leave a little more room for now. More time has passed, more opportunities for potential kills based on whatever motivation this killer truly has, which, like, we have an idea, but do we really know? I'm not sure.
Well, right. That's exactly why I did go a little bit lower here, because it's like we're at a point where it's like, what is the motive? Like, is it what I think it is, or is it random? Like, it could be like most of the people at this camp suck. So is it?
Yes.
What's, I don't know for sure what the motive is. So I just gave myself a 75 because it's like, I think fair. I'm fine, but there's just a chance that I don't realize what this motive is, and I could just being at the camp. Of course I would be at a camp. There's no reason. It's not like some movie was where it's like, I would never go to this private island for this fine dining experience. Like, I could find myself at a camp as a kid.
For sure.
So yeah, 75, just because we don't know for sure what's going on, but I have an inkling, so it's still high. So later on, during another swim period, Paul goes walking over to Angela on the bleachers and apologizes and is like, I don't know what happened. She just wouldn't leave me alone. And he begs for another chance. Yeah. I actually don't know what we're supposed to take from, like, if we're supposed to be upset with Paul. Like, I don't know what the writing intention is here. Because, like, the situation before, he was like, I'm not doing anything, and then still goes to, like, try to unbutton. Is that just a norm in the 80s? And that's not, like, supposed to, like, make us upset with him? I don't know, but I'm upset. And then this, too, where it's like, she wouldn't leave me alone. It's like, yeah, she has been very forward and, like, constantly in their business. It's like, do you want me to believe him and, like, think he was manipulated by Judy, or am I supposed to be upset with him because he is supposed to be all in on Angela? Like, I don't really know. It doesn't really matter, but it's just like,
No, that's an interesting point, because, like, from an 80s perspective, maybe you're not, but from a 2025 perspective, obviously you're like, ew.
Also, the fact that he's like 14. So it's like, if you were like a 25 year old, I'd be like,
that's true.
Like, no, you were not manipulated into kissing that one. I mean, I'm sure there's some cases for sure, but most of the time that's not the case. Whereas when you're 14, it's like, okay, like you're like in, like the brain's real underdeveloped in there. Okay. So anyways, he's like, she wouldn't leave me alone. And he begs for another chance, but Angela ignores him. She's just silently staring in another direction. You know, she's doing what she always does when she's hurt or like doesn't feel comfortable around someone. She just does not interact. And Judy freaking walks up. Like, she's always there. Judy's always around a corner.
Oh,
it's tiring. She walks up, she's like, back together so soon? Boy, Angela, you sure are forgiving, especially after he told me what a prude you are.
Ugh.
And Paul looks up at Judy wide-eyed and then is just like, I gotta go, and walks off.
Ooh.
So it seems like he did say that.
Yeah.
Yeah. With him gone, Judy directs all of her evil energy at Angela and goes, how about a swim? What do you say we finally get you in the water? Meanwhile, off to the side near the lake, Mel starts interrogating Ricky about how his summer has been, and it's clear that Mel thinks that Ricky is the killer.
Well, yeah. Okay.
Yes. Back to Angela and Judy. Judy's still harping on her, insisting that she takes a swim, screaming at her to answer her or do something, do anything. Jeez. Meg walks up. So obviously it's only going to get worse. And it does. Mm-hmm. Meg grabs Angela, throws her over her shoulder, walks on down to the dock, and throws her in the lake.
Oh my God.
Ricky clocks this just before they throw her in and tries to run and stop it, but Mel grabs his arm and is aggressively holding him back and screaming at him, oh, you're going to run to her rescue again. Kill everyone who messes with her. What are you going to do this time? Another drowning or something worse?
Ooh.
And Ricky is just trying to get out of his grip, like very confused now, like not much to say except, huh? Like what? Ronnie, the younger co-owner, sees Mel acting crazy with Ricky and runs over, pulls Mel off of him, and is like, Jesus Christ, Mel, like, what are you doing? And with Mel distracted, Ricky is able to get away and help Angela out of the water. Angela's coughing up a bunch of water as Ricky gets her over to the bleachers again, patting her on the back, and he's comforting her and saying, it's all right, Angela, you're all right now. We won't let them get away with this, that's for sure. He's really upset. Then we cut to a team meeting with the counselors that night. Everyone's getting different assignments. Eddie's annoyed because he's stuck, which this is the first time Eddie is being brought up to me as well. Like, who's Eddie? Apparently he's one of the counselors.
Love that.
He's annoyed because he's stuck bringing the group of the youngest campers on like a little overnight excursion camping in tents by the lake situation.
Oh.
But Meg is super excited to find out that she has the night off. And the first thing she does is go over to co-owner in his 70s, Mel.
Oh, dear.
And tell him, hey, guess who has the night off? Remember that dinner you promised me at your place?
Okay.
Yeah. I will say there's been very little moments throughout the movie. The first time I watched this movie, this came really out of the blue to me. When I went back and like was writing the script for it, I was like seeing these little moments where she's like kind of basking in his attention here and there.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So it makes sense, but also, well, it doesn't make sense because what's happening? Like,
yeah.
But there were little seeds. This man is in shock because, like I said, he's at least 70 years old and this is probably an 18-year-old.
Oof.
Uh-huh. And he's like, yeah, how does 9:30 sound? And she's all giddy and she's like, you got it. See you then.
Ew.
Before skipping off. I don't know if there's like – I don't know where this is coming from. I don't know why this is happening.
Yeah.
This wouldn't happen, just being honest. Back at her cabin, Meg's like – girls, I got me a date tonight. I can't tell you who. It's a secret. Like, she's so excited, though.
Ew.
And she wants to take a shower to get ready for her date, but all of the showers are being used in their cabin at the minute. So she's like, ugh, I'm just going to go over to the empty cabin next door to shower.
Oh, good. Yes.
Yes. You guessed it. While Meg is showering, the empty cabin's front door creaks open, and we see the shadow of a silhouette holding a knife. And that knife stabs right through the, for some reason, very thin cardboard shower wall and into Meg's back, starting at the top, then drags the protruded knife down to the bottom of her spine.
Ew, gross.
Yes. R.I.P. Meg.
Sorry, girly.
Out in the woods, Eddie is wrangling a group of little kids to a little spot where they're going to set up camp, tells them to start setting up the tent while he goes off to find some firewood.
Mm-hmm.
Back at the rec barn thing, Angela's leaving for the night. There's like a social happening, and she's leaving for the night looking solemn as usual. And Paul comes up to her trying to apologize to her again for everything. And she's more concerned about where Ricky is. Girlie's just trying to hang out with her cousin. But Paul tells her that Ricky's not feeling well and is lying down back at their bunk. And in the middle of Paul continuing to beg for Angela's forgiveness over him calling her a prude, Judy comes marching out.
No, she can literally go sit down somewhere.
Why is like, she everywhere?
Dude.
She marches out, shoves her way between them with counselor Mike in tow, like attached to her hip now. She's very happy to show him off to them. And Paul's like, I hate that girl. And goes back to begging Angela's forgiveness. And she goes, okay, meet me at the waterfront after the social. So now we go back to Eddie and his group of kids in the woods. Now, I thought before when he told them to – I guess his words were set up camp. I thought that would involve a tent.
Yeah.
And I was wrong. They're raw dogging it in their sleeping bags on the forest floor.
Sir, there was nothing to set up.
Yeah, right. Like, take your sleeping bag out. But yeah, so one of the kids is having trouble falling asleep. And he's like, Eddie, I'm cold. Like, I want to go back. I can't sleep. Which valid. Like, I would not – have you ever done that? Like, slept outside without a tent? Like, just in a sleeping bag?
Absolutely not.
The bugs? Oh, my God. In a forest? The bugs would go crazy.
I'm all set. Like, I'll do it in a tent, but not just in my sleeping bag.
Anyways, this kid is so valid. He's like, please take me back. and then another kid pipes up too. He's like, yeah, I want to go back too. And Eddie's annoyed because he just wants to go to sleep.
Yeah.
But he's like, all right, let's go up to the car. Let's go. Like, I guess they're deep enough in the woods that they drove in, which is insane to me. But
Yeah.
He heads off with these two kids, leaving three kids behind in the middle of the woods.
Don't love that.
And as soon as Eddie is gone, we get a POV of someone in the woods walking up to the sleeping kids with a hatchet.
Oh.
And I would guess some bad intentions.
Yeah, I would think so.
Back down at the social going on in the rec barn, Mel walks in looking for Meg. When he asks Susie where she is, Susie's like, I don't know. Did you check our bunk? So that's where he heads to next. And before going in, we see that Judy is in there making out with Mike. And they hear Mel coming. So Mike quickly hides under the bed. And Judy starts pretending to read a magazine when Mel walks in. And Judy ends up telling him that the last time she saw Meg was when she left to go next door and take a shower. So, of course, Mel heads next door. Mm-hmm. And that is when he finds Meg's body. And he's like, oh, my God. He goes, oh, my God, not you, Meg. okay. He's not concerned about anyone else.
Shucks.
And he's like, Ricky did this to get back at me. I had him and I let him go. Forgive me, Meg. Please, I'll stop him.
Oh, my God.
So basically, when we cut back to Judy, Mike is like, I'm going to go. And she's like, he's not going to come back and you know it. And he's like, yeah, whatever. I'm still going to go. And then she's like, oh, you're an idiot. Like, basically, he's just not into it with her.
Oh, interesting.
So he's just like, yeah, I'm going to go now. So now she's alone in her bunk and she's curling her hair.
Okay.
When the door swings open and we see a very menacing silhouette standing there before switching to being the POV of the killer, walking slowly toward Judy. And once she realizes who it is, she goes, oh, it's you. What do you want? And instead of an answer, she gets a punch to the face. Ooh. And then the killer holds a pillow down over her face before grabbing the hot curling iron.
Oh, dear. Here we go.
And we only see the shadow of this, but I believe it's implied that the killer sticks the hot curling iron inside of her. And that is an RIP to Judy.
Okay. When you say inside,
I mean what you think I mean.
Okay, great. That's that's awesome. That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's crazy. Like, I don't want to talk spoilers of other movies, but there is a death in another movie that uses a curling iron. And it is put inside, but via the mouth. And I thought that was bad.
Mm-hmm.
I never did I imagine it would go somewhere else. That's crazy.
Back to Eddie. He's returning to the young campers in the forest that he left behind to bring back the other campers. And he finds them all hacked to pieces.
Oh.
Yeah. So that's like three kids, probably around like 5 to 6 to 7.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And he pukes and then he runs off screaming for help. Back at the rec barn, everyone is leaving the social now. But Ricky is now showing up and tries to go inside. But one of the counselors, Jeff, stops him and is like, hey, social's over. Get back to your bunk. Ricky explains that he was at his bunk all night, not feeling well, and he just wants to grab something to eat.
Mm-hmm.
So Jeff is like, okay, just hurry up. Ricky heads inside, grabs himself a handful of candy just as the lights are turning off, and he's one of the last ones to leave, walking back to his bunk alone. He walks past the admin shack where we see Ronnie is getting a call about the three dead children in the woods. Yeah, yikes. And that's when Mel jumps out and grabs Ricky and drags him off the path into the woods, screaming at him about how he killed Meg. And he slaps him hard enough that Ricky, like, falls to the ground. And Ricky screams, I don't know what you're talking about. I didn't do nothing, he says. And Mel's not listening. He gets down on his knees and starts beating the shit out of Ricky.
Oh.
Back to Ronnie, he's contacting all of the counselors, trying to get them all together for an emergency meeting. Back to Mel, Ricky is now dead. And Mel calms down, feeling good about himself, and goes, I got him, just like I promised Meg. But then he realizes what he's just done and is like, wait, I have to get away. And then he starts to run off into the archery station of the camp. And we see him look off camera at someone we can't see and his eyes go wide. And he goes, wait, it can't be you. And then he gets an arrow to the throat. R.I.P. Mel. Back at the admin shack, Ronnie and a bunch of counselors are gathered together when the police roll up. They called the police.
Okay.
And the officer tells Ronnie to have all of the counselors just stay inside their bunks with the kids. And that's when Susie runs up saying that Judy and Angela are missing. Jean walks up and is like, hey, yeah, Paul and Ricky aren't back to the bunk yet either. They're all just freaking out. This is a mess. The officer's like, all right, we need to just break into pairs and go looking for these missing kids then.
Oh, boy.
Then we cut to Paul. He's waiting at the waterfront, just like Angela told him to.
Oh, right.
And finally, Angela shows up and Paul's like, I didn't think you were going to show. And Angela responds with, let's go swimming. And Paul's like, what now? Like, what about our clothes? And Angela goes, take them off. And Paul's like, okay, say less. And he tears his shirt off. And Angela starts to work on her blouse buttons. And that's when we cut to Jean and the officer searching through the woods with flashlights. The officer finds a candy wrapper that ends up leading him to Ricky's body, like soaked in blood.
Oh, yep.
but Ricky starts coughing.
Oh.
And they're relieved to find out that he is still alive. So they carry Ricky back to camp. And then as they're walking back, they hear a girl screaming at the top of her lungs. So they run to the sound, which is coming from the extra girl's cabin where Meg's body has now been found by one of the counselors.
Okay. Yes.
Then we cut to Susie and Ronnie. They're off searching for the missing kids, not having been around for the revelations back at camp just now. Mm-hmm. And they're making their way down to the lake when Ronnie stops and hears something that sounds like singing. So he's like, okay, what?
Ew.
Yeah, weird. Let's check that out. And what they find happening at the waterfront is wild.
Dear. Oh,
so
dear.
Angela is sitting like pretzel style.
Okay.
Completely naked, with Paul lying down with his head in her lap, and Angela is just stroking his head and humming a little tune to herself.
Oh, dear.
Of course, Ronnie and Susie are like, Angela, like, are you all right? Hello? You okay? Can you hear me? And yeah. Angela's ignoring them. They're walking closer and closer, trying to see what's going on here. But then we cut away to a little flashback.
Uh-oh.
It's of Aunt Martha, and we hear her saying, oh, you're going to enjoy living with us so much. Yes, I know you are. As a ew. Welcome home present.
I did not miss this. Jesus.
As a welcome home present, I bought you such wonderful new clothes. I do hope Ricky doesn't get jealous that I didn't get him anything. I'm sure he won't mind. At this point, we see Angela standing there in front of Aunt Martha with her head down, completely wrapped up in bandages from the boating accident. Like, she did get some damage there. Aunt Martha continues, you see, I've always wanted a little girl, but of course when my husband left, oh well, that's all water under the bridge, as I always say. But it certainly will be a nice surprise when Ricky comes home to find a little girl in the house. Yes, I've always dreamed of a little girl just like you.
Ew.
I mean, we already have a boy, so another one simply would not do. Oh no, absolutely not. A little girl would be so much nicer. Don't you think so, Angela? I know you're going to like that name, won't you, Peter?
What? Wait.
Which is the brother.
Yeah.
Peter finally looks up at the sound of his real name, and we realize that, yes, it was Angela that died in the boating accident with her father.
Wait.
It was Peter that survived.
What?
But Aunt Martha has been forcing Peter to live his life as a girl, pretending to be his sister, because she just didn't want another boy in the family. Like, she already has a son.
What?
Yeah.
I'm going, wow, okay.
Yeah. We get a very sudden, hard cut back to sleepaway camp. And Susie and Ronnie have discovered that Angela, or rather Peter, has decapitated Paul. And there's blood all over his mouth, insinuating that he's just chomped right through Paul's neck. Like,
oh, okay, okay.
And Peter stands up here and starts like hissing, like opening his mouth as wide as it will go. And there's just like this throaty, harsh hiss coming out of his mouth. And the camera pans out to show the completely naked Peter, revealing that yes, he has a penis. It's right there.
Oh, there it is.
Yes. And Ronnie and Susie are just standing there in shock. And Ronnie goes, how can it be? My God, she's a boy. And the movie ends with Peter standing there naked and hissing.
No, it's not over. That's not the end of the movie. That's literally not the end of the movie. Okay.
Yeah. I imagine your brain is scrambling and is in a million different places as to what, like pinpointing down which controversy we're talking about here and how to speak eloquently about it.
Jesus. Yeah. No, my first question, who is Peter played by?
It's like, a girl.
It is a girl.
It's just like a biological girl. Yeah.
You're watching the movie and you think it is a girl.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. But I will say something that I left out, because it seemed like they were going for the shock factor of like, she's been her brother all along.
Yeah.
Something I left out was in the beginning when we see the boating accident, I literally saw Peter like swimming frantically after we saw the dad and Angela dead. Like, Angela's missing and the dad is like floating dead. Peter is like splashing, like trying to get away. So I was like really confused when we cut to the Aunt Martha scene and she was like calling for Ricky and Angela. I was like, wait, is Ricky, did I misunderstand? Because I saw it was like the boy that survived.
That's weird that they would frame it that way.
I feel like that was a mistake. Like, I don't know if it had something to do with like a remastered version where it was supposed to be cut in a square and then you can see that kid like now that it's widescreen or something like that, because I'm also confused as to why they would show that.
Yeah, that's weird. That's
but
really
that's why
weird.
She was like that, the whole physicals thing. She's like, don't tell them how I got these physicals. Like,
oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay,
it goes back to that. A lot of like commentary, like why Angela didn't want to shower with the other girls, or maybe even swim. She wants to be as covered up as possible.
What I will say is, like, I never in a million years saw that twist coming. Mm-hmm. I was like ready for you to say Angela was the killer, which I think a lot of people probably were watching the film at that point. But for it to be Peter was definitely not on my radar in the slightest.
Yeah. And I think like a big reason, obviously outside of the childhood trauma of like what happened to his sister and dad, is like the trauma of being forced to be a girl and like big, big identity issues.
For
when it comes to that and like not knowing who to trust, because like you can never fully be yourself. So it takes, I'm sure, a lot to like trust someone to even give a little piece of yourself away and hopefully build up to the moment where you tell them who you really are. Like, this is not a trans woman. Like, this is like a boy who's being forced to be a girl. So like, I'm sure with Paul, she wanted, or he wanted, to go for a swim and show Paul, like, I'm actually a boy.
Yeah.
And I don't think Paul responded well to that. And that's where that murder came, how that murder happened.
So it was more of a reaction rather than a setup? Because I was assuming it was, come here to the water, I'm going to kill you.
I don't think, I mean, you could interpret it that way. Like, I don't know for sure if I'm right here. Like, they definitely theorize, but I think, like before when she was like, I don't know, like I'm referring to her as she when she is she in the movie, and then I'm referring to her as he like when the reveal happens, but like I mean he the whole time technically, but
fair enough.
When Angela like was like, I'm not ready yet, when it came to like him unbuttoning her blouse, I think she was like, I'm not ready to like show you who I really am. And I think she was gonna give him a chance, and like I really do think she was gonna like try to show him. And I'm curious about whether Ricky knew. I don't think he did, but that's weird to me. I think it's like a suspension of disbelief thing that he did not know.
Right. That is interesting. Does this also imply that based on like your watching of it, Peter is gay?
So this is that's part of what I want to talk about too, because I think I think so. I wrote out like some talking points.
A lot here. Holy shit.
Basically, a big controversy of the film is the villainization of a trans character, to put it simply. Like, the reveal that Angela is actually a boy is this big horrific thing on par with the murder reveal. Like, the final line of the movie is literally, oh my God, she's a boy. Not, oh my God, she murdered these people. Oh my God, she decapitated Paul. Like, no, they're like scared and shocked by the fact that she's a boy. That's so crazy. So yeah, I don't think, and the final shot, like they make Angela, Peter look so scary. Like her face is huge and wide and like terrifying, and she's covered in blood, and she looks animalistic. It's like, that's not a great shot to be paired with the she's a boy reveal, you know? That's a little odd. So yeah, I personally don't think that this movie was made with good intentions for the trans community. But after reading up on some different opinions online, there's also a side to this debate where people are like, whether it was intended or not, this is actually the story about how damaging it is to force someone to live a gender that they don't identify with.
Ooh.
Which again, I'm like, I don't know if the writer was that progressive and like forward thinking, but I think not. Like accidentally, like you are proving a good point here, whether you intended to or not.
I think for sure it was not like this intended deep thought, like for sure. I am curious though, like because you're saying the way you're viewing it is with intent to be damaging to the trans community. Is that what it was, or was it like just wanting to do this like reverse, like this shocking moment where it like without that at all being a part of it?
Because I don't think they had the trans community in mind at all. I think they were just like, this is a shocking, scary moment, without realizing that that's problematic. I think they just like didn't even give a thought just based on how it's handled. It's just it really comes off as it's supposed to be all shock factor at the end, and that's all it is.
Interesting. No, I just find it interesting as a conversation because I think I'd be curious to know what this person's thoughts on the trans community are. Mm-hmm. In the sense that I don't know if I want to jump onto they're a terrible person because they did this. I don't know that that's fair. Maybe it is. Maybe they have really negative opinions.
But one more thing that I'm also intrigued by is I don't know if anyone has good theories about this. I wonder what we're supposed to take away from this. But yes, I want to get into Angela Peter's sexual orientation here.
Yes.
To me, it really did seem like Peter liked Paul. But I'm like, did I read it wrong? Was it just as a friend? Because like he did react very awkwardly to the little kisses. And of course, like we know how panicked he was when Paul went to unbutton the butt. I think that's just because he's like, I'm not ready to show you who I really am.
Right.
Also, when that was happening, like the unbuttoning of the blouse and then Peter had those flashbacks. I was like, so when Peter was thinking about seeing his dad and his dad's boyfriend in bed together, giggling at the sight with Angela, then Peter pointing at Angela in bed while being spun around. Like, I need to hear people's theories about that moment. Right. Was Peter trying to accept his attraction to boys by thinking about his father and how he was in what seemed to be a successful, like, happy gay relationship? And like, he's like, okay, that's fine. Like, I can like boys too. My dad did and was happy and whatever. Or was thinking about his father and like thinking about how his father's gay relationship made him and Angela giggle. Did that make him feel like, oh, this is something to be giggled at? This is something that I can't be. I am not sure. And then the whole pointing, like Peter pointing at, it's weird. I couldn't tell if Peter was going to touch Angela's blouse in the flashback or if he was just pointing at her and the finger, because it was a pointing thing, but it was like closer and closer to the shirt. So I was like, what are you doing here? I don't know. It's weird because I don't want to get it. I wonder if it's, I don't think it's supposed to be incestual because
see,
it's like
that's
innocent
what I
kids.
Took.
It is. Okay.
But I was going to ask, like the flashback, is it them as like children or is it them grown up? Okay.
Yeah. They're like five. Yeah.
Okay. Well, then that makes it super weird to even think about. But I was just, you know, you just reminded me of two. My brain is running right now. There's so many things. But the fact that the dad was in a gay relationship, you're in the 80s, you're by having that relationship, you are admitting that you're conscious of these things, which means it's hard for me to imagine that they're not conscious of the trans narrative that they're working
like,
with.
Like, writer-wise.
Right. Because, like, if you're like, okay, we have a gay relationship, how can you then not see what you're doing in the end? So, like, that is interesting. Oh, the gay relationship with the dad almost makes me feel like it could actually have been a deeper thought.
Maybe.
That's so interesting that we just, like, don't know. I mean, I'm guessing they haven't really spoken about it from that perspective. And if they haven't, that's like probably not a good thing. I don't know.
Yeah. What I did like look up, I was like, okay, theories about sleepaway camp. Like what's going on here?
Yeah.
And I would expect, you know, if there were like writer, director interviews or people would like use him as a source, be like, he said this, but there was none of that. So then I was like, okay. I'm curious about what the rest of the franchise does, if like they explore that more, because the franchise goes into the 2000s, I believe. So I'm like, okay, by the 2000s, are you guys going to like actually like more purposefully, like forwardly continue this theme of like what you're trying to say here, like make it any clearer? But also just – this is random, but side note. I really hope that Artie doesn't come back as a villain in the future because, you know, he is like the one that was attacked but didn't die. He just got carried away in burns.
So
I'm like,
true.
I wonder if he's going to come back. Like that'll be awful. But
I hate that.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know, man. That was that.
I feel like truly like this is such a – I feel like people are on Discord will probably have some good conversations that'll bring up more thoughts for us because there's layers on layers to this movie.
Yeah.
Because it's interesting because when you were telling the story at first, I was like, okay, I can understand why she wants to talk about
some potential problematic things, but they're problematic things in all 80s films. Like, I'm looking at, like, the what they do with the women, and there was, like, the potential of Paul pushing boundaries, and I was like, okay, I guess we could talk about these. And then you got to the end, and I was like, ah, there it is. I see now. Yeah. But this is just really interesting.
Yeah. I also wonder, like, is Peter going to be in the sequel, like, or do they just decide to tell a different sleepaway camp story with new sets of characters? I don't know.
Right.
I would love to watch the next one and see what they do.
I'm curious. I'm looking at pictures of Angela right now. Yeah. I was, like, curious. And, like,
oh my gosh. That is... It was so funny. When in the scene where Judy gets killed, alone in the cabin, and the door opens and we see a silhouette.
Yes.
It's Ricky standing there in a wig. What? And I'm like, oh, it's Ricky. Like, when I was watching it the first time, I was like, it's Ricky. That's crazy. Like, and then, she gets killed and everything. And then I looked that up too after. I was like, what was up with Ricky standing there? Like, because it wasn't Ricky. Like, it's revealed that Angela is doing all of this. And they said that, like, on the original taping, the quality was bad enough that it just looked like a silhouette, but then, like, in its remastered version.
Oh.
That's why I'm also wondering if, like, the situation at the beginning has to do with, like, how it has changed over, gotten, like, remastered over time, because now it's just, like, bright enough that you just see the actor, like, Ricky is standing there in a wig, and it's like...
Oh, that's so funny.
But they chose to do that. Like, they chose to use Ricky because they wanted to, like, keep it androgynous. Like the silhouette androgynous, I think.
Yeah.
To, like, still have you wonder, and they did not intend for you to tell that it was Ricky.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Also, I want to say that I looked this up, and I look up Sleepaway Camp Angela. Yeah. Horrifying final image.
That's what I'm saying. It's really bad.
It's really scary, and it's interesting. There is no censoring on this, Google. Just so you know, Google, you gotta.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
That's real great. No, that is so creepy, that the way that they did that.
Yes.
Yikes.
That's what I'm saying, is, like, to an underdeveloped mind, like, that can be a really harmful image to show in a, like, a trans when you're thinking about the trans community, because it's like,
absolutely,
that looks like a monster at the end there, like, genuinely. Yeah. And I don't know. That's why I come back to, like, what was the writer's intention? Because he was, like, the writer and director. So, like, he directed that. I don't know. That it's, like, a crazy shot to end on. And you expect it to go a little deeper, but it doesn't. So then you're left wondering all these things. And it's like, okay, damn. Well.
Fascinating.
Well, that's that.
Yay!
You guys can check us out on Instagram at I'd Survive Podcast. We have a bunch of links over there, including one to our Discord, where you can please, please, please talk about this movie and also submit your own scores and let us know, would you survive?